now.
And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
By Godders! Man, it's been a long time. Welcome back to the Smoking Musket Podcast. Recording from outside of the heart of college football, this is Bart Keeler. You can find me on Twitter at BartimusPrime19. Here to prepare you for the 2017 WVU football season. I know it's been a while since we've last talked. I apologize for that. Believe it or not, we do have lives outside of working for Vox Media. And if you want to know more about that, you can talk to my co-host for this football season. That is the site manager for www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. You can follow him on Twitter at westbygod_. Mike, welcome back. We are, at the time of recording this podcast, 10 days away from the time that West Virginia and Virginia Tech will be kicking off. How does it feel?
It kind of snuck up on me here at the end. It felt like the beginning of summer took so long, and this last month just kind of flew by.
It was very weird. I know for me personally, I kind of cheated it a little bit on the Smoking Musket this summer. Wrote a little bit for Dirty South Soccer to cover Atlanta United. And I've had that since March to kind of tide me over to football season. So I'm like, oh, it's fine. It was good. It was a good way to numb the pain of the last football season. But I am glad to be back. That's for sure.
Yeah, it feels good. Feels right.
It does. It feels right. Obviously, we're going to talk about the 2017 WVU football season. That's really the main purpose of this podcast. We will put out a Virginia Tech preview next week. We'll invite some older Smoking Musket writers and contributors and just fans of WVU to talk a little bit more about Virginia Tech, because it's a rivalry renewed. But you know, whether we like to think of it or not, or think about that or not, Virginia Tech is not the most important game on the schedule, although you could argue that it is. We have 11 other games. We're going to talk about that, specifically all those Big 12 games. We'll talk about the roster changes and projected lineups, strengths, weaknesses, all that kind of stuff that you want to know. But first, Mike, we have a few offseason headlines to talk about, and just I'll talk about them and I'll get your thoughts a little bit. On how you viewed them. I guess the biggest headline is in terms of Big 12 sports. Bob Stoops is no longer the head coach at Oklahoma. He kind of randomly and surprisingly stepped down. Of course, if you ask people close to the Oklahoma program, it wasn't all that surprising. But Lincoln Riley will take over as the offensive coordinator and head coach, and he will be the youngest head coach in college football right now. What does this mean, not just for West Virginia, because I think it doesn't really mean too much this year anyway, but I mean, this is a huge vacancy now in college football in the Big 12. What does that mean?
Well, it means that the stranglehold that Oklahoma's had on the Big 12, it might be not as tight as it has been. I have no idea how Lincoln Riley's going to fare at Oklahoma. I think he'll be good. I don't know if he'll be Bob Stoops good at Oklahoma. Of course, we won't talk about big game Bob, but it's going to be interesting. I have no feeling about how this is going to go, how it's going to fare for him. I think he's a good coach. I don't know.
Yeah,
if he's
proven that.
I don't know if he's a good head coach. Like, I don't know.
Yes. I mean, obviously, we've seen a lot of offensive coordinators turn into head coaches in this conference, and they were very good offensive coordinators. I mean, we're looking right now at Cliff Kingsbury at Texas Tech, and we're looking right now at Dana Holgorsen at West Virginia, and they've gone in very opposite directions. I mean, Cliff started out really hot and has since learned, I don't know if he's learned, but we've seen the flaws in his coaching style. And Dana Holgorsen, I know this is kind of a homer take, but I think he's evolved the best as a head coach to go from an offensive coordinator to a head coach. And, you know, I think we'll see the final realization, the final evolution of head coach Dana Holgorsen this season, which kind of leads me to my second, if you will, my second headline, is the fact that Dana Holgorsen isn't going to call plays this year for West Virginia University. Jake Spavital has been brought in as the offensive coordinator, and Dana, this is the headline really, is given control, well, given play calling duties to Jake Spavital. How does that affect what West Virginia is going to do this year? Or does it?
I don't know if it does. I feel like Dana might be able to manage the game better, as you know, since he doesn't have the play calling duties under his hat there. But I don't know how much it actually changes things. And I know all summer, all you heard, every interview with Dana, the first question out of every reporter's mouth was, why did you give up play calling duties? He had to have been getting tired of answering that question. He just, it seemed like the natural progression for Dana's career. Just go ahead, bring somebody in, let them run the offense, let him be a actual head coach, manage the game, oversee what he needs to see. And I think he's embracing that. And you can tell it seems like he's having more fun with it.
Well, we saw the more fun Dana Holgorsen after he got his contract extension. But I think so. I think actually this is the best time to do it because, you know, with Skylar Howard, obviously he and Dana had a very good understanding of play calling and Dana had a great feel for Skylar Howard. I think Dana, honestly, he got the most out of what Skylar was going to give an offense. But you bring in a new quarterback who is much more suited for the professional game. And I truly mean that. I mean, Will Grier is coming in and we'll talk about this a little bit in the next headline, but Will Grier is coming in. He's a new quarterback. Why not start with a new offensive coordinator and a guy who clearly is, you know, called plays and worked with Dana in this style of offense before? I mean, why not? That's kind of my thought is, well, why wouldn't I let Jake call plays? He's just as good as I am,
right,
if not better.
And remember, Jake was the guy, he was the QB coach for Geno Smith. I mean, we saw Geno's improvement over those two seasons or whatever. So I think it's probably the best, because I think Jake, and he's going to do good things with Will Grier, I think. I think he's a really good QB coach.
I agree. Now, what we don't know, and I still haven't figured this out, two questions I have about this. Firstly, will Spav be up in the booth, or will he be down on the field calling plays? And I guess the second question to that is, will Dana wear, you know, the gold and blue this year instead of black? And I don't mean that as one of those, like, well, he can't be a Mountaineer head coach because he doesn't wear, you know, our school colors. I understood why he wore all black. It made sense. But now I'm kind of curious. But, you know, I don't want to create a story out of nothing, but these are questions I have. But like I said, we now get to pivot a little bit into this and talk about the fact that Will Grier is eligible. There's your headline. He had to sit out a year for his transfer from Florida to West Virginia. And we were concerned if he would have to sit out then another six games because of his suspension while at the University of Florida for a performance-enhancing drug. Don't read too much into that. It's not what you think.
There's actually a really good article by Bleacher Report, and Will Grier actually helped write it. I'm sure he didn't write the whole thing himself.
Yeah.
Find that. Look that up. It's a great article. It tells about what happened to him at Florida, how he was treated by Jim McElwain, who's, I don't know what he's doing this offseason, probably laying naked on sharks again. I don't know.
I don't know why he wouldn't. but it does. It explains very well why he ended up where he is, and that's obviously now at West Virginia University, and we're glad to have him. He will be able to start on September 3rd against Virginia Tech in FedEx Field in Landover, Maryland. So those are good things. I don't know if there are any other big headlines that really we need to talk about. Mike, anything that you want to hit on?
I mean, we could hit on Javon Durant leaving and Marcus Sims.
That's right, yep. Okay, so Javon Durant transfers to Florida Atlantic. He'll go down with Clint Trickett and Lane Kiffin.
Garen Justice is there. Basically, it's Morgantown Light.
with more old people and more money.
Right.
A few more beaches, maybe. I think that's about the only difference. You know, when this news broke, I was kind of almost like nonplussed.
Yeah.
Sure. You know what? Whatever.
It felt like that was the way it was headed with all the rumors that were circulating. And it didn't help with certain people on Twitter saying that he was gone before. I don't even know if he'd made his mind up at that point. But, I mean, he did have a death in the family. His grandma passed away. I'm pretty sure she raised him. I totally understand going back home.
Yeah, he's from Miramar, which is Miami area. Boca Raton is where FAU is. It's, you know, it would be the equivalent of going to, well, it's basically like going to, what's the school in Waynesburg? Washington and Lee. No, not Washington and Lee. Is that Washington and Lee? I can't remember my two named. Washington and Jefferson. There it is.
Yeah.
If you're from Pittsburgh.
Right.
There it is. I was like, there's a two-name school somewhere in Waynesburg. he went home. I'm not going to ever fault the kid for wanting to go home. I think FAU will be a fine place for him to land.
I agree. And I'm going to be watching their games on Saturdays whenever. I mean, as long as it doesn't interfere with our games, I'm going to be watching.
Yes.
Because I have general interest in – I want to see how Clint Trickett does as a coach. I want to see – I just like watching Lane Kiffin.
Yes.
Which is weird because I'm also sort of a Tennessee fan. I guess they're my SEC team.
No shame in that.
There for a while, I despise Lane Kiffin. But now he's kind of just like – I don't know. He's transcended into like – a troll. He's like the troll coach. I don't know even how to explain it. He's fun to watch and follow.
Yes, he is. he is definitely the butt of a lot of jokes.
And he embraces it.
He does. He makes no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But, you know, in his defense, he hasn't had the best career. He's been fired from two jobs somewhat very unceremoniously.
He was left at an airport, and when President Trump fired, was it Rince Priebus, he was tweeting about how he got left at the airport too. Like he's embraced the ridiculousness, and I kind of like it.
And you know, it makes sense for him. He's going to FAU. He needs to create some media buzz about it. You know, granted, he is the most boring person to listen to try to hype up. They've had a couple of season ticket holder videos, and they're hilariously bad. Let's see, any other... Oh, yeah, Marcus Sims was arrested for a DUI.
There's really not a lot of information out about that.
We don't think it... From what we can tell, we don't think it was alcohol-related.
Right. And I know he is going through, I guess, a student conduct case through the university, according to Mike Casaza. I think the major issue here is he had that first DUI in Maryland back in May and didn't tell the coaching staff. That's not a good look. And I think that probably is what is going to hurt him the worst.
Yeah. You know, he's not going to be playing in the foreseeable future. Let's just put it that way. I mean, I think both of the reasons we just talked about, one, you get your second DUI that's not good, and two, when you don't tell the coaching staff about your first one, you're not on their good side. I think that's really the last real headline when it came to WVU football. I think that's it. If you want some positive notes to end on, we'll switch to women's soccer, who are still ranked number one in the country, which is pretty cool. And, you know, they'll be fun to watch this season. That's all the headlines I really have for WVU offseason. Sorry we were a little absent. Like I said, we have lives. We get busy with things, and you know, during football it's kind of hard to come up with things to talk about. But we are back. We're ready to take you through this 2017 season. You know, I think my first thought about this 2017 season before we get into anything deeper is just, I am curious. This is the first time that Dana has had real expectations. And I mean that. I mean really, really expectations. I don't mean, yeah, make a bowl game. I mean, you know, we went 10-3 last year. We made a decent bowl game. You know, whether or not we did well in that bowl game is up for some debate. But I think Dana has some real expectations on him, and I'm curious to see how this team handles actually having expectations to win. That's just my take on the 2017 season before we dive in. What about you?
I don't know how to feel about this season. If you listen to all the outside prognosticators and stuff, we're going to have a terrible season. We're going to not meet expectations. I don't know where they're getting that. My gut tells me otherwise. We'll talk about here.
I also want to know what their expectations are, because we'll talk, and again, we'll talk about this, but yeah, I mean, it's like, oh, they're not going to meet expectations. What are expectations? If you're expecting this team to go 10-3 again, I don't think that's, I know that's not my expectation.
No, I'd love for us to go 10-3 again, but it's, I think
there's a path to go 10-3.
Oh, for sure. I don't know if we're going to get there. I think we'll get close, but I don't know if we're going to get there. Really what I would like to see, which I don't know if it's going to happen. I want to play in the Big 12 championship this year, whether we're the one team in the conference or the number two team in the conference, or if we're playing Oklahoma State or Oklahoma, it doesn't matter. I would love to be in that championship game on December 2nd. I think if that happened, I would, the whole season would be a success no matter what else happened.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, last year we finished third in the Big 12. I said we went 10-3, finished our season with a loss in the Russell Athletic Bowl, which is now the Camping World Bowl, to the Miami Hurricanes, which hurt for a number of reasons. But I felt like that was a sour end to what was otherwise a really good season. We beat everyone other than the two teams in Oklahoma. We finally got the Kansas State monkey off of our back. We were able to defeat Baylor despite trying to lose that game. We beat Texas and Texas again. You know, I thought last year was West Virginia taking advantage of a Big 12 conference that had a lot of uncertainty, and we were the most solid team, I think, in the conference, and except for literally two games. We looked pretty much the same every game. You know, we had a quarterback who was a little up and down, but when you look at his numbers, he was fairly consistent throughout the season. He had a couple of good games, a couple bad games. I think that is where I'm concerned about this season, is just the consistency question. And again, that's where I'm concerned. I don't know if we're going to be able to be as consistent. Our defense wasn't the greatest, but it was pretty good. Our offense wasn't the greatest, but it was pretty good. So, you know, 2016 for me was a success more than just going 10-3. I thought it was a success because we looked to be the third best team in the conference, and that's where we finished, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, that was good. And like you said, we did have an inconsistent, I guess I wouldn't even say inconsistent. He was consistent for the most part. It just, he turned in his worst performances in our biggest games.
Right.
And we had that working against us, and we shot ourselves in the foot numerous times. And it wasn't just him. I mean, Oklahoma, we fumbled. I mean, Justin Crawford fumbled. Like, it was a perfect storm of shit, basically, that knocked us out of those two games. So, hopefully this year, I have no real expectations going into the season. I don't know what to expect.
So we'll get a little bit into the roster breakdown real quick. I think we'll start at the top, if you will, and that by that I mean the most important position, and that's at the quarterback. And we were talking about, you know, a young man named Skylar Howard who served West Virginia quite well. I mean, he played for 2.5 years a little over 2 years as a starter. You knew what you were going to get from Skylar, and that was a lot of hard work, a lot of hustle, a lot of guts, a lot of heart. And the ability to throw the long ball and the inability to throw across the middle, which, in his defense, he got better at his senior year. But it would be – you would find – it would be hard to find anyone who would tell you that Will Grier is not an automatic upgrade at the quarterback position. And I think that's where people doubt West Virginia in terms of returners, I say we have a guy who can actually run a full offense. And I think that was something that hampered us last year, is a guy who really wasn't able to open up the entire playbook that Dana wanted to. And I think you have Will Grier, who is a true leader at the quarterback position, a great mechanical quarterback, all these things that should lead to more production from that position.
Right. And one thing, and
right.
Hopefully. And one thing I've noticed just by kind of creeping on Instagram and stuff, and it's kind of like an intangible thing, Will Grier has really like embraced West Virginia culture.
Yes.
Like,
similar to the way Skyler did. I mean, I think they both got immersed in it very quickly.
Yeah, like Will seems like a West Virginian at this point. Like, he is fully, fully embraced it.
He has the beard, he has the wife and kid, they're all up here. You know, I think you're right. He's ready to step into this position. Moving on though, offensively, honestly, we didn't lose a whole lot. You know, we lose some wide receivers that Skyler relied on heavily, and Dakeel Shorts especially, who's with the Bills, right?
Yes, he's with the Bills, and actually looks like he might make the 53-man roster.
Okay, I was making sure that's who I was. I mean, he looked like he was playing pretty well, but I kind of blur out when the fact the Bills are playing, to be quite honest. you know, I think that's the that's the real loss. I mean, I think Gary Jennings is out, graduated as well. I don't know if that's a huge lot at the wide receiver position.
No, Gary Jennings is still there.
He is? Okay, yeah. I can't keep up.
Well, I think
I had him as a senior.
We lost Dakeel, we lost Shelton Gibson, and that may have been it.
Shelton, obviously, more of a long ball threat. Dakeel, well, you know, when it comes to production, Shelton Gibson, the long ball threat. Dakeel Short's the guy that Skyler threw to whenever he wanted. And to be honest, Dakeel was probably our best when it came to actually making a catch receiver we had. So, you know, that's concerning. But one thing that West Virginia has never had a problem with, and that's depth at the wide receiver position.
Right. And even with Javon Durant leaving and Sims's status with the team up in the air, I think we're still going to be fine. We do have David Sills back, and from everything I've read, like, him and Will Grier like instantly hit it off. I think they're probably like, they're going to be that who was it in Texas? It was McCoy and whatever. It was always them hooking up, and they made sure, like, do you know they're roommates? That's what they. So I think that's going to be like the big connection there. I think we're going to see Grier and Sills a lot. Gary Jennings is back. Caron White. Those are our three main receivers right now, according to the depth chart, which the official depth chart hasn't come out.
Because I do think that he has the ability. No, it hasn't come out. You know, we'll probably be able to say definitively what people will do, where people will land when we do our Virginia Tech preview, just because, you know, I mean, we don't know yet. I don't think Dana necessarily knows. He probably has an idea, but William Crest is over at the wide
receiver. William Crest is wide receiver.
Position now. So.
Wait, is he wide receiver? Is he...
He's listed. So
he's moved around so much. Like, I remember at the end of last season, before he transferred out or was thinking about transferring out, they switched him to the defensive side of things. So yeah, he is back as a wide receiver. He might be able to step up. I mean, he's athletic. Like, I feel like he's going to be able to make some sort of impact. I hope.
Yeah.
And another one to look out for. I think we're going to see Kennedy McCoy inside a lot.
I think you're right. Kennedy McCoy, the running back who had a great season last season in the running back position, but showed some really good ability to catch the ball, as you said, kind of in that inside receiver position.
Right. And Dana said this week, the depth chart only lists the one inside receiver position.
Right.
And he said Kennedy is our number one H, and H is the other inside receiver position that's not listed on the chart. So that tells me that he has Kennedy McCoy working inside a lot, which makes sense because our backfield is stacked. I mean, Justin Crawford.
Well, and it also confuses defenses then. I mean, if Kennedy McCoy is out there, you have to at least account for his running ability.
Right.
But we'll talk about the running back position in just a second, because I think when you look at the offensive standpoint, that's clearly our best position. But one name that I hope you hear a lot of, or probably will hear a lot of, is Elijah Wellman. He's back for his I think this is his senior year. Yeah, it's his senior year. Yeah. The tight end fullback combo. But just, I mean, in my opinion, just a solid, reliable person to have back there who should be a good leader on this offense. And honestly, will probably come in handy when you look at our offensive line, which is suffered a little bit due to matriculation and some other things, but I think Wellman will factor in as well. So that's the wide receiving core. Running backs, as we said, I don't want to say we're loaded, because I mean, we're not like P. Ryan and Mixon loaded, but we've got a lot of guys who can do the job, and I think that's the most exciting part. We mentioned Kennedy McCoy, who quite honestly had a great year as a freshman. And it really didn't feature in terms of like a feature back, but he was definitely a support staff, if you will. You have coming back, you have Justin Crawford, who for my money was our best running back we had last year. Most consistent, that's for sure. Martell Pettaway, who unfortunately had to burn his red shirt, but man, he looked good in that Iowa State game. You know, I mean, I think we're good. We've even got guys like, let's see, Alex Singfield and Tevin Bush, who are freshmen coming in, who are just fast, you know?
Right. And
that's what Dana wants.
I think out of those two, I think Tevin Bush has the best chance of seeing some playing time.
Yes.
I think Singfield will probably redshirt, which is probably for the best. But from all accounts, like, Tevin Bush is just fast. Yeah. And that it's just another dimension to our running game that we could – go to if we need it. So I feel really good about our running backs. And I'm going to steal, I guess, a name from the Raspy Voice kids who are, I guess, friends of the Musket. And they're calling our running back group The Stable. And that is an awesome name. Like, that is just, that's the brand. I love it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what you want. I mean, this is something that Dana has built recently. I thought for a while there we were going to be wide receiver U, and I still think we can be that way, but the running back position at West Virginia has been incredibly strong. Also, look for Tevin Bush on special teams. Coming out of high school, he was very good on the receiving, kick returns, punt returns. He is shifty. I mean, the kid's 5'6", so he's got to be hard to tackle, right?
Well, you would think so. And going back to receivers, another name I feel like we left out that's probably going to get some time this year is Reggie Roberson.
Yeah, yes. Pretty tall kid.
Yes. I think he's going to be a good backup. I think he's going to get playing time this year. I'm sure of it.
Now, we'll have to, unfortunately, focus a little bit on the offensive line. I think this is obviously where we have our biggest concerns. We're breaking in a new center. His name is Matt Jones. Hopefully we don't have to talk about him too much this year. That would be awesome if we don't have to talk too much about Matt Jones. But, you know, that's just something that is an unfortunate part of college football, is you're going to lose guys. I mean, what is your initial kind of prognostication of this offensive line?
I think they're going to be solid. I think that's one of the big factors. I think people that are saying we're going to be down this year, they're looking at, oh, well, they lost, you know, Tyler Orlovsky, and they've lost a ton of people.
And we did.
But the people we're replacing them with have had playing time. It's not like we're putting in, like, people that have not seen a snap. I mean,
well, right now we're looking at a redshirt sophomore, McKivitz, a redshirt junior, and Kajust, who has unfortunately been hurt for a couple of years, but, you know, that's just kind of what happens.
And both of them have played. What, McKivitz came in for Yodney last year when he got hurt.
Yep.
And he was good.
Offensive line was not our biggest problem last year. In fact, I would say that was one of the reasons we were good.
Right.
Kyle Bosch, redshirt senior, will definitely be the anchor on that line. And if you haven't seen his pictures on the interwebs, I highly suggest you just look up Kyle Bosch.
Our very large adult son, Kyle Bosch.
Yes, large adult son, Kyle Bosch. He's
Heisman
hilarious.
Candidate.
Yeah, we are submitting that right now to the Solid Verbal and I think the Shutdown Fullcast. Anyone on the who listens to those podcasts, which I suggest that you do through our SB Nation of sites. They do all college football all the time. Well, let me rephrase that. The Solid Verbal does all college football all the time. I think that Shutdown Fullcast does college football most of the time. So, there you go. But they do this Heisman Trophy Award, and it's, you know, the Heisman for a lineman, and it's kind of a funny thing. But I think Kyle Bosch is definitely the guy who can make that happen. There's a name to look out for. But basically, our point is, it's not like we're starting freshmen, you know?
Right.
We've got some experience. They've all played. They've all been in this system for at least a year or two. So I agree. I'm not as concerned. I'm concerned because that's where football is most. You can't have a good running game, which like we had last year, without a decent offensive line. Anyone will tell you that. Ask Ezekiel Elliott and the Dallas Cowboys. I'll ask Adrian Peterson and the Minnesota Vikings. Both examples of good and bad when it comes to running the football with a bad offense with an offensive line. But I definitely think there's some concerns, and I think it does start with that center position. But again, it's not like he's a freshman; he's got some experience, so I'm not entirely scared.
Yeah, and I think I blanked out here. The offensive line coach, Joe Wickline. I think he's a good offensive line coach. I think he's going to be able to coach those guys up. I feel good about the offensive line. I don't think they're going to be great, but I think they're going to be good, and I think they're going to do what they need to do. And of course, they'll get better as the season goes on because that's
right.
The nature of the game.
Right. I mean, that's hopefully the plan is that they continue to progress. And again, these guys have played. Kajust is moving positions. He's going from the left side to the right side, if I'm correct. But the kid can play. So, he's definitely a strong, talented guy. He's probably our most talented lineman recruit we've had in a while. So, he knows how to play. But hopefully we don't have to talk about it as much. Hopefully it's hey, they played all right. And that's all we need. So I think that's all when it comes to the offensive positions. I don't think we left anything out or anybody out. I hope not, anyway.
No, I think we got them all.
So we'll switch a little bit over to the defensive side of the ball. Now, this is where people who have kind of evaluated our team, and I think this is a rightly justified evaluation. Defensively, we don't know what we're going to get. Now, we said this last year, but I do think that what our defensive coordinator, Tony Gibson, had to work with was experience across the line. And we don't really have that this year, although they're not inexperienced. But, we're losing some we're losing the experience that we had last year and a lot of production. I mean, we were a very aggressive defensive line, and that allowed Tony Gibson to play some more aggressive style of defense in the defensive backfield. So how does he adjust to that? Maybe he doesn't have to. Maybe our defensive linemen are going to be just as good as they were last year. What do you get the sense of coming out of camp so far?
I don't really know. I haven't got a good sense really of anything about along the defensive line. I think they'll – I don't know. I feel like we'll be all right again, but that's like the one position I'm really iffy about. I don't even know if I can tell you who's going to be starting along that defensive line right now. I'm trying to find the depth chart or projections for the depth chart. I just saw them the other day. Do you have it?
I couldn't find them. I don't know where you're finding them.
Kasaza did. He did like a depth chart projection.
Oh yeah, of course Kasaza would do it. There's the headline. Kasaza's no longer with the Charleston Daily Mail or Charleston Gazette. He's with 247 Sports. But whatever. We still love you, Mike.
We'll have him on the podcast sometime this
season. Yeah, we will. He's always a good bi-week podcast guy. Now I will say, from a defensive line standpoint, I mean, obviously Virginia Tech is a really good team, but after that we have Delaware State and ECU and then Kansas to get them adjusted to life in real college football. Obviously, I think ECU is probably the toughest of those two teams, but who knows what Kansas is going to be this year. They've recruited really well, apparently. I don't know how, but they actually have recruited well. So from a defensive line standpoint, hopefully we can get, you know, three or four games where they're growing into their positions, and, you know, before we get to the meat of the Big 12 schedule.
I'm still trying to get this depth chart. It's driving me crazy. I can name some of the guys, like Ezekiel Rose from East Mississippi. I think he might be able to slot in there.
Yeah, we had a lot of transfers, which is nice, yes.
Let's see, I found it. Okay, going down. Okay, so he's got the defensive end Adam Schuler and John Lewis, who have been in the program for a few years. And they've both had a good amount of playing time. And defensive tackle, he has Xavier... I can't even pronounce his last name. Pegues. I'm not sure how he pronounces it. They've got him slotted in as starting at this point. And then at backup, we got Reese Donahue, Ezekiel Rose on the ends, and Jalen Harvey, who's also a transfer, JUCO transfer.
Yeah.
So there are guys that have had playing time experience. So I don't think we're going to be hurting. It's just, are they going to be able to step up into the, I guess, a more prominent role and perform the way they need to?
Right, and I think, you know, with Gibby's defense of the 3-3-5, your defensive line, if it's a little outmatched, you can give it support with either a linebacker or a defensive back who is putting pressure on the offensive line or the quarterback through some end blitzes. But really, what you want is three guys who can just eat up space, specifically when it comes to the run game, because, you know, especially in the Big 12, you've got some guys who, if they can break the first level, they could be gone. And that, it, to me, is more concerning than the passing game, because I still think, I mean, I think our defensive backfield, despite what people say, is going to be just fine. But, you know, from a defensive line standpoint, I just want them to eat space when it comes to the run game, because I thought we didn't do a good enough job at that last year, especially when teams got into the second level, and that's concerning for me.
Right, and moving on to the second level, I mean, linebacker, that's another potential weakness. We got Xavier Preston. Yeah. Al-Rashid Benton returns, and he's probably the most experienced defensive player other than Dravon, I guess.
Who we get back, which is nice.
And then, of course, David Long is out for up to four games, I think is what Dana said last. But in his spot, we got Dylan Tonkery. And by all reports, he is better than Wes was. So...
Oh, yeah.
I'm totally okay with that.
Yeah. You know, you've got experience to throw out there. I mean, like you said, Al-Rashid Benton, a redshirt senior, Xavier Preston. David Long's going to hurt being out, but you still have... Quandarius, I'm going to try to get his
Quandarius
name right.
Qualls, yes.
Yeah. Who, I mean, these guys have been playing for a couple years in the system. And you've even got some redshirt sophomores and freshmen who, though they haven't seen playing time, have played under Tony Gibson's defense. So, yes, there are some legitimate concerns at the linebacker position. But I think the key of Tony Gibson's defense is that it's a mindset, a mentality, and a scheme thing where they don't get beat easily. And that's their mindset. You know, they don't want to give up big plays. They want to be tough. They want to be physical. And if you can bring that into the scheme, that mindset into the scheme that Gibson has, that should be enough, hopefully, to get us through.
Right. And going back to defensive tackle, there was somebody that I missed that I kind of want to throw a shout out to, Lamont McDougal. I think he might be my favorite incoming freshman. Just following him on Twitter and Instagram and stuff, he seems really – he's another one that's really bought into the program and what Gibby is selling. And I think he's going to be a good one for us, if not this year, for the next 3 years or 4 years after this. So keep an eye on him.
Yeah, that's a, I mean, that's a good call. I think, again, I think there are questions that we also kind of had last year. You know, where are big play guys going to come from? Because we lost a lot of them from the 2015 season, and we replaced them last year in 2016. Fortunately, we lost those too. So we'll move back then. We'll go to defensive backfield. Obviously, you said Drayvon Askew-Henry is back, which is probably the biggest, the best thing that could happen for this defense. We've got a great ball hawk, big play guy who can make plays in the passing game, and really, in my opinion, kind of scare some wide receivers. I mean, Big 12 teams are going to throw it everywhere. So if you can have a guy who quarterbacks have to, you know, be aware of where he is on the field, you know, you've got him, you've got Elijah Battle, you've got guys like this who have played a long time in this system who hopefully can bring some concern to Big 12 offensive coordinators and quarterbacks.
Right. At corner right now, it looks like Hakeem Bailey, who I think I'm pretty sure he was a JUCO transfer this year, enrolled in January, and Elijah Battle, they look like they're going to get the starting job at cornerback.
Yep.
Backing them up is going to be Mike Daniels and Corey Winfield, who was the Syracuse transfer. He's already beat Virginia Tech once. It'd be nice if he could get in. But I think he may be injured. I'm pretty sure he had surgery on a hand, but I don't know if that's going to affect playing time. And then at safety, we got Drayvon's back at the free safety. And then Kaiser White. Can't forget about him.
The man still wanted in Texas for the murder of one Shane Buechele.
And then at Bandit, it's going to be Toyus Avery. I love that name.
Yeah, that's – we've got a couple of good names on here. You know, again, we had, I think, especially on the defensive backside, we had these questions last year, and we got people like Rasul Douglas. So, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen again. I think these are legitimate concerns that people have, but – I will say our defense just needs to be solid. I think last year we definitely had some issues on defense, specifically, you know, granted this is playing in the Big 12, but we were an efficient defense, but we weren't great at controlling explosive plays, and we weren't really great at defending the short running game. So we didn't have a lot of stuffs. We didn't have a lot of, we didn't really sack as many quarterbacks as I thought we should have, but these things didn't affect the way we were able to play defensively. And again, this is what happens in the Big 12 conference. When a quarterback is holding onto the ball for 2 seconds and throwing it, how are you going to sack somebody?
Right.
So, you know, read into those stats what you will, but I still think they're a little concerning and the areas that I wish we could improve most on this year. Let's see. I think our kicking game is pretty much solid. Mike Molina will be back to kick, you know, whether you like him or not, he's back. Billy Kinney seems to be the punter to be here again. We said Gary Jennings, you've also got Tevin Bush to return kicks, both punts and kickoffs. So, you know, I think our special teams might actually be the most solid group we have on this, or at least the most the group that we have the most knowledge about.
Right. The one thing I want to see this year is I want to see Gary Jennings call a fair catch.
maybe he's learning.
It does exist. It is a thing that you can do. So hopefully he figured that out.
Well, and that is, good Lord, you know, that's where you have to learn that sometimes no return is better than a turnover, or, you know, it.
We'll just leave it at that.
I still want a year where our return game is not going to be something that, and it was better last year. It was a lot better than 2015, but I still don't want to be concerned every time they kick the ball to us that we're going to give them right back away. Specifically looking at the Oklahoma game, you know, but
yeah,
whatever. So yeah, that's kind of our roster breakdown. I think, you know, like we said, that we have projections about where people are going to be for the depth chart. That'll come out next week ahead of the Virginia Tech game. I don't know. I mean, what else do we? I don't think there's any really thing else that we need to cover when it comes to the rosters.
No, let's just go through and pick out one person from each side of the ball that we think is going to be the most impactful player this season. And I'll let you go first.
All right. I think the most impactful player on the offensive side of the ball is going to be I think Caron White, because we're looking to replace the sure-handed receiver, and I think Caron White needs to be that guy because of his height and size.
All right.
So there's that. I don't know if he will be, but I want him to be.
Yeah, that's who I was going to pick as well. I think we're going to see kind of the progression that we saw out of Kevin, hopefully. I think he's going to be the guy this year. I'm excited.
Yeah. Now, you could also say that Justin Crawford will be the most important because he's going to be the, you know, not the bell cow running back, but from what I saw last year and what I expect, he'll be the starter and definitely the guy who will get the brunt of the carries. So there's another guy you can look at. Defensively, I think it's Al-Rashid Benton for a couple reasons. One, he plays a linebacker position, which is so crucial to this defensive scheme. I know our defensive backs are good, but you've got to have good linebackers who can do both, you know, pressure quarterback stuff runs and defend the passes. So I think for me, it's Al-Rashid Benton on the defensive side.
Okay. That's a good one. I'm going to go with Drayvon. I think he's going to have a good season. I think he's going to be yet just another Mountaineer that we see playing on Sundays next year. So I think the trend's going to continue. We've put a lot of defensive backs in the NFL.
Yes, like, we have.
So I think it's just
funny because we put a lot of wide receivers and now we're putting a lot of defensive backs. It's like clearly these guys, you know, going against each other in practice is helping.
Right.
I think that makes Drayvon was a big miss last year in terms of, you know, he got hurt. He blew out his ACL. That was a non-contact injury that he had in practice. It's just the weirdest thing. You know, guys are running through just speed drills and they tear their ACL. But luckily, he's back. And I think had he been there with some other guys on defense last year, we would have had a more intimidating defense. But, you know, that's the biggest concern I have defensively is do we have the intimidation factor? Because for the past 2-3 seasons, Gibby has put out intimidating defenses. And I don't mean like, oh, they're scared to play us, but you knew that our defense was going to put up a solid game. And we still need that in the Big 12.
Right, yeah. And I think lining up against across from our defensive line for the last couple of years, that had to have been intimidating. I mean, Noel Nwachukwu.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an intimidating guy. Probably a gentle giant outside of off the field, but he just looked intimidating. He's with the 49ers now.
Yep.
Just another person that Gibby's put into the NFL.
And, you know, those are things that, again, Gibby has found that one guy where he has a really good season with WVU. And quite honestly, don't read into this comparison as much as I'm going to say it, but that's what good defenses do. And I'm looking at like Alabama and LSU in terms of they have a guy who plays for 1 year and you're like, wow, he's great, but he only got to play one, maybe 2 years, you
right.
know? And I think that's an evolution that West Virginia is finally getting to, is that we're putting a guy, you know, for a year out there on linebacker or defensive back, and he has a really good season and gets drafted. Well, it's because the guy in front of him was also really good. So, you know, I don't know if that's necessarily the case this year, but we definitely have some seniors who are going to be pretty good, hopefully be pretty good. And, you know, let's hope they have their big year this year.
Yeah. Oh, and going back to the headlines real quick, that was another one that we kind of skipped over. Alabama wide receiver TJ Simmons transferred to West Virginia.
That's
he's
right.
already on campus. Actually, we kind of cleaned up in the transfer department.
We did.
Allison, for the QB from Miami, and then Giovanni Haskins, the tight end from Miami. T.J. Simmons is already kind of making an impact. There were some highlight videos from fall camp of him just making ridiculous catches. So that's another thing to be excited for next season looking ahead. I wish he would have been like a graduate transfer and we could have him this season, but
yeah,
it's probably for the best.
Well, Dana has recruited his best quarterbacks through the transfer market. And, you know, a lot of people have concerns about that. And I understand the concerns, but if you can get a good quarterback who fits your system, no matter where you can get him, go get him.
Get him. Yeah.
And obviously these are guys that we'll have to talk about next year, but you're right. I mean, clearly West Virginia has become a destination where guys who don't get their first choice college or whatever, their first experience in college to work out as well, they're coming here. I'm okay with that a little bit. You know, I think we can be the island for misfit toys and eventually, you know, grow a better team. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I'm good with it. And, I think we might be in on – there was a running back that transferred from Alabama this year. I think he went JUCO. From the sound of it, we might be going after him as well. So bring him in. Let's do it.
Yeah. I mean, we've got some good roster talent coming up next year. We do have some good roster talent this year. I hope you were able to understand what we were saying through all of it. But for now, we'll take a break real quick. We'll come back and talk about our schedule, make a few, not really predictions, but just projections, if you will. So stick around. Again, this is the Smoking Musket Podcast. You're listening here on www.smokingmusket.com or on iTunes or however you're listening, and we appreciate it. So stick around for part two. My Godders, welcome back to the Smoking Musket Podcast. I'm Bart Keeler. Joining me tonight, Mike Miller, our site manager at www.smokingmusket.com. We're shifting gears now. We just talked about in part one, kind of headlines and the roster changes and whatnot. Now we're going to talk about the actual schedule ahead of us, the 2017 football season. Mike, we open up with a big one. Sunday, September 3rd at 7:30 p.m. on ABC. The bright lights are shining on this Black Diamond Trophy rivalry, West Virginia versus Virginia Tech, and the neutral site of Landover, Maryland, which, you know, we were there last year against BYU. It was a decent game. It was, well, I will say, it was an entertaining game, that's for sure. Having been there, it was an entertaining game. But, I mean, we're finally getting... We get another, well, I don't want to say finally, but we're getting another big money matchup to start the season. Before we start diving into that, like I said, we will have a preview for the Virginia Tech game next week or this week, whenever this podcast gets released officially. But we'll have a preview just for the Virginia Tech game. But before we get into that, just first thoughts about the fact that we have these big primetime matchups for us on opening weekend.
I'm a fan, and this goes back to playing Alabama in the college football kickoff. I love that they give Dana a full summer to prepare for these teams. And let me just point out that Dana has come the closest to beating Alabama in a season opener. The closest out of, like, going back however many years. I mean, it's always been...
Well, Nick Saban's never lost an opener.
Right.
So there's that. And, we came within 10 a couple years ago here in Atlanta, which was a hell of a lot of fun.
So don't give Dana a full summer to game plan for you. I mean, not many good things can come from that,
well,
I think. Good for us.
But... Yeah, well, I will say, you know, I think Virginia Tech, as good of a season they had last year, they were... Let's be honest. The ACC Atlantic is a lot like the SEC East. Sure, you're the best team in that division. You're still cannon fodder for the other division. And Virginia Tech happened to be the best team in that division they were playing that year, and that's good for them. You know, claps, good for you. Still breaking in the, you know, this is the second year for their head coach. Of course, his name is escapes me right now.
Justin Fuente.
I was like, it's something weird. So, you know, Justin Fuente is, again, kind of, I don't want to say learning, but still learning about what to do when it comes to preparing a team for a season. Obviously, he had pretty good success at Memphis. You know, but again, he has expectations. I would say he has a lot of expectations. Virginia Tech football fans have this weird thought about them that they actually are a good program. And, you know, they think that they should always be at this level competing for conference championships where, you know, if you really look at it, they haven't always been that. But, you know, he does have expectations, and that's what happens when you go, you know, you get a 10-win season your season before, when you make a conference championship the season before. But, again, I don't know what – excuse me, the ACC Coastal, not Atlantic. Atlantic is Clemson and Florida State. But anyway, you know, he's in the weaker of the two divisions in the ACC. So I'm interested to see how they adjust. They have to break in a new quarterback. You know, that is something that they definitely will have – breaking in a new quarterback – your first game of the season in a stadium that is bigger than the one you're in. I mean, it's a pro stadium. It at FedEx may be a little bit old, and it's you know, not the prettiest stadium. It's not the best stadium to go to, but it's a professional football stadium, and you're going to have bright lights on you. And it's not like Lane Stadium. It's not the friendly confines of your, you know, half-assed four grandstand stadium you have up there in Blacksburg. It's, you know, it's a real stadium that you're going to have to play in. So I'm interested to see how they're going to have to do that. I don't know. It's a big question because I don't think either side is incredibly set and solid. I think this is going to be a feeling out process for both teams.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And the one thing, I started writing an article on it earlier this summer. It is insane when you stop and think these kids that are going to be playing in this game, they don't know anything about the Virginia Tech-West Virginia rivalry.
No, like, they don't.
There was an article in the Roanoke newspaper where they interviewed some of the – Cam Phillips, I think, their wide receiver, and he knew nothing about the rivalry. Like, it is insane that we've gone this long without playing these guys.
Well, it's unfortunate. It's really unfortunate. You know, we were able to fit the Maryland rivalry in there, but I think that was because it was already a non-conference game that we had already scheduled. We lost the Pitt rivalry. We lost the Virginia Tech rivalry, and you know, it sucks.
I just hope that both sides figure this rivalry out real quick next Sunday.
Well, there's a video floating around the internet of the Virginia Tech football team practicing to Country Roads that was on. And I kind of wondered why, because I was like, you know, yeah, we play that a lot and we sing it a lot, but you don't want to hear Country Roads in a game because that means you just lost.
Right. Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
If you're preparing for, then that's fine. You know, great. If you're preparing to lose and have to hear Country Roads at the end of the game and we smack you by 30 points, awesome. Please, by all means, prepare for that.
Yeah, so they kind of own themselves in that regard. And speaking of being owned, our own John Lowe apparently got owned by Virginia Tech's Twitter today. Did you see that?
Yeah, so what happened there? No, because that was the one thing I didn't see on the internet.
All right, so John is moving on. He's a capital J journalist now. He's working for the DA and handling all the DA sports stuff, and he's with the Herald Dispatch in Huntington now. But he was manning the DA Twitter today and misspelled the word bulletin. And of course, Virginia Tech's like their football Twitter just posted a little eyes emoji, and it just did like hashtag spell check. Like, it's like, come on.
We've all been there.
I mean, that at least that was organic and not like a certain other opposing team site trying to DM us setting up a fake rivalry on Twitter to get people interested. I'm not going to throw out names, but it was a Virginia Tech blog.
All I'm saying is that our fans, all the good by Godders out there, are ecstatic and pumped for this game. I don't know about Virginia Tech.
They must not be too energetic because they're trying to set up fake feuds to get people interested.
Yeah.
It's like, no, the feuds will happen organically.
Yeah, we don't need help to hate on Virginia Tech.
Right.
They may not be our first most choice to hate on. I mean, obviously it's Pitt. And then I think it goes, the pecking order depends on where you live and who you are. But Virginia Tech is in the top four, at least. We're not fans of you. We don't like you. We're never going to like you. So we're good.
It's
crazy. We don't need to pick fights with you.
Right.
Whatever.
And there's a weird division in the state. Like, I feel like down here, since I'm basically in Virginia Tech's backyard, because I'm closer to Blacksburg than I am Morgantown, the hatred for Virginia Tech down here is a lot more than it is for Pitt, which I'm an equal opportunity hater. I hate both of them. But the Virginia Tech hate is very real here. And that's probably something we'll dive into next week. I think,
you're right. I mean, here in Georgia, UGA has really, in my opinion, three rivals. But depending on where you live in the state, you might have other rivals. For example, if you live out on the eastern side near Augusta or on the South Carolina border, you're going to hate Clemson in South Carolina. If you live up north, you're going to hate Tennessee. If you live anywhere west of Atlanta, you're going to hate Auburn. But clearly Georgia Tech and Florida and Auburn are really their three rivals. So you're right. I mean, look, if you live up north in the northern part of the state, you know, north central, northern panhandle, whatever, even a little bit to the eastern panhandle, you're going to hate Pitt. That's just how it is, because Pittsburgh as a city dominates that region, and Pitt as an institution is just a terrible place to have to go with terrible people, and, you know, I feel sorry for them. But, I remember growing up, actually, my middle school bus driver was from Bluefield. I think she was from Bluefield. She was from around there. She grew up in West Virginia for the most part, but was also like on that weird side where half of her family was in Virginia. I think half her family was in West Virginia. And she even told me about this. She was like, yeah, I mean, it was you had family from both sides, and it wasn't fun when the two teams had to play. So it'll be fun to dive into more of this rivalry next week. You know, it's nice to renew it. I will say this, when I was looking to get parking for this game, I wanted to get parking in the West Virginia lot because I like that camaraderie a lot more, but I couldn't find any, but there were plenty of spaces in the Virginia Tech lots open. So I don't know, maybe the Virginia Tech fans just don't know how to tailgate, or they don't actually care, but I don't know what their issue is.
I guess we'll find out next Sunday.
According to Bill C., the stats guru of SB Nation, we have a win probability there of 27%. We're picked to lose by 10.5 points. So Bill C can go, you know, he can go fall off a cliff for all that care. Bill C's numbers hate us, by the way. So whenever we reference Bill C's, just understand that, like, he does not hate West Virginia. In fact, in his projection, he was like, they're going to be down, but the numbers hate you, and I don't know why.
Right.
And so he at least admits that.
And the hate on Bill C, like you said, it's, Bill's a great guy. Like, I like
him. He has a system. His numbers are, I'm not going to say they're infallible. They don't tell the whole story, but they tell the story that I think most people can look at in a college football game, and that's fine.
Yep.
Next, on September 9th, we will host another old rival of sorts, a friendly rivalry, but East Carolina will come to visit Morgantown. The Pirates in purple and gold will make their way up to North Central West Virginia for a matchup that I don't think we've seen since, when was the last time we played them? 2009?
That sounds right.
I should have done more research on that, but it was before my cousin friend who played at East Carolina. Before he played there, we ended our series, and he graduated high school in 2010. So it would have had to have been 2009.
Right.
Look, I love East Carolina fans. If you want to go party with a bunch of people who kind of care about football but more care about partying, East Carolina is the place to go. They're great. And they will bring good barbecue. So make friends with them. Eat your whole hog barbecue with your vinegar sauce. It'll be great. Share pepperoni rolls with them. Win probability there, 76%. This is one of those, to me, kind of benchmark games. East Carolina is a good power, you know, group of five team, good American Conference team. They're not as good as they have been, but they're a solid team. If we can handle them, then I will feel very confident about the rest of the season.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, they did come off a pretty bad season last year. I don't know how they're looking this year, but
They should be better. They have a second-year head coach with Scotty Montgomery. They have, I think it's a second-year starting for this quarterback, too. So, you know, should be better, but we should be able to handle them. So if we do that, I'll feel confident.
Yep.
Then we play Delaware State on September 16. It's a game.
It's a game. It's on AT&T Sportsnet at noon. And it, heads up, everybody, Root Sports is not Root Sports anymore. It's AT&T Sportsnet.
Yeah, they just changed the channel. I don't think it actually will change any
any
quality.
Yeah, so when you see AT&T Sportsnet and you're freaking out about what channel that is, it's Root Sports, Pitt. So there you go.
You'll get it. Don't worry. By the way, that East Carolina game on Fox Sports 2, so at noon. So that, you know, hey, that's cool. Then we start the Big 12 slate on September 23rd at Kansas. Now, we haven't had easy first games for the Big 12 since we joined the conference. First 4 years, we opened with Oklahoma. Last year, we opened with Kansas State. So I'm not saying Kansas is easy. I think Kansas is this team that could either be really good and surprise people, or they could just be Kansas. Not sure yet. But to open up the season with Kansas will be a nice ease into the conference schedule.
Yeah, the first four games of the conference schedule, I like that we ease into it, but that backside of the schedule, ugh.
It's completely backloaded.
Yeah. Thanks, Big 12. All right.
What do you expect?
Yep. Let's power through these.
Yeah, there you go. We go to Kansas. Then we go to TCU, so we have a back-to-back road game. Projected to lose that one by about two touchdowns. Now, this is one I kind of call BS on. Tell me where TCU is better than us.
I don't get that one at all.
Totally forgot to mention this. I'm sorry. Big 12 preseason rankings came out. Oklahoma 1, Oklahoma State 2. West Virginia is 6th. We were a team that finished 3rd in the conference last year.
I don't see getting five teams that are better than us.
No.
Like, I don't...
We're getting an upgrade at the most important position in the conference. We're keeping a lot of talent on the offensive side, which in this conference matters. Everyone rags on our defense. Who in this conference has a defense better than ours? Maybe TCU, because Gary Patterson does put out good defenses. But where in the recent history, has TCU put up a good defense?
I don't understand how they get it. I do too. I don't know.
These are the issues I have. Sure, we have questions on defense. Every other team in this conference has questions, because no other team in this conference even attempts to play defense the way we play defense. So we're picked to lose by two touchdowns to TCU. Whatever. Come back against Texas Tech, and somehow we're only a 50% chance to win that, according to Bill C's numbers.
For homecoming.
Again, where is Texas Tech? They lost a quarterback, too. Pat Mahomes is in the NFL playing for Kansas City.
And they have no defense. They don't play defense.
They try.
I don't know.
I don't see how we only have a projected margin of 0.9 points and a 52% chance to win that game. Whatever, Bill C. Don't like your numbers. Then we face Oklahoma, or then we go to Baylor, excuse me, which, again, we're projected to lose this game. How, I don't know. I guess Baylor still has talent, but I personally don't think Baylor should be being able to compete at football this year. I don't mean they shouldn't be able to play, but it's completely irrational how they're even able to be a competent football team at this point with everything going on. But I digress, and I don't want to get into a shouting match to the NCAA because they're stupid, greedy, and corrupt, but whatever.
So we have to go read Mark Slaybaugh's book that just came out this week. Go read that,
yeah,
and that'll fill you in on all you need to know about Baylor. So, moving on.
Yeah. And then we get to the, this is where what Mike was talking about. This back half of the schedule in the Big 12 is tough. October 28th at home against Oklahoma State. Now, Oklahoma State did a number on us last year, but I would argue that that was because of one player in particular not being able to play at a competent level. Skylar Howard. He is no longer with us. He is no longer playing quarterback for West Virginia. That said, Oklahoma State has two of the best offensive players in the Big 12. That's Mason Rudolph and James Washington. Mason Rudolph is quarterback. James Washington is a wide receiver. They know how to find each other. And no matter how hard we try, we will not be able to stop that combination. I'm just telling you right now.
Yeah, and a bit of a hot take here. Oklahoma State's the team to beat this year. It's not going to be Oklahoma. It's going to be
I don't
Oklahoma
think it was
going to
be Oklahoma this year anyway, even if Bob Stoops were coming back.
Right.
So, I agree. Oklahoma State, luckily we get them at home. There's your luck there. We get them at home. Haven't beat them in a couple years. It would be nice to do it at home this year. And then, to me, the sneakiest, hardest game on the schedule, November 4th, at home against Iowa State. We are projected to lose this game. Again, I don't know how we are projected to lose this game by 49%. Whatever, Bill C. We're projected to lose to Iowa State. Tweet at him if you want. That's fine. Don't get mad at me for spreading this news. But because we're an SB Nation site, we use these numbers. That's all I can tell you. But I will say Iowa State is going to be a much tougher game than it has been in the past. Not that it's been easy, but they should be better. Now, how much better? I don't know. I still don't know how much better. They will be better, but we said that last year, and they weren't markedly that much better.
Right, they're right there with Kansas with that big question mark. Like, they could be good, or they could just continue to be Iowa State and Kansas. I would like to see them get better, just for the overall state of the conference. But
yes, and that's the thing. It's like, okay, we want you. It's a little bit like what SEC fans dealt with when it was when Mississippi State and Mississippi were getting good. Like, oh, this is good for the conference. And then it was like, wait.
Not too
wait.
Good. Yeah. Stop.
Wait. So someone needs to find the recruiting violations going on at Kansas and Iowa State, and we'll be fine. I'm kidding. Don't do that. They're, whatever. But anyway, then we travel. This is another reason why our Iowa State game is tough. We travel then to Kansas State. So it's stuck in between these two really tough games, Oklahoma State and at Kansas State. Now, we're projected to lose it at Kansas State, and I can understand that. Kansas State has forever been our biggest problem in this conference. We finally got over that hump last year thanks to a gutsy performance by Skylar Howard, a gutsy performance by our defense. We came out on top with a come-from-behind victory. I don't think we scored until the fourth quarter that last year, if I remember correctly. Do we do it again in Manhattan?
I don't want to say a definite yes. Because, I mean,
yeah, I don't know.
Never underestimate Bill Snyder and his wizardry, but that's another toss-up.
This is the only team that I think people feel confident about. They will be good at defense. They're the other team in the conference who actively does try to play defense. Unfortunately, a lot of that defense comes on their offensive side of the ball, where they're going to run the ball a lot. Now, I think this year will be different. I think they will open up the passing game because they have a quarterback who can handle it and wide receivers who are competent, but they're going to be tough, and if I think that's one of the ones that we could lose. Then we come back home on November 18th against Texas, who...
Wait. Let's have a little heat check here. Is Texas back?
Well, when they beat the team that ended up going 4-8 last year on their way to a 5-7 record, they were back.
Let me remind you, Kansas beat Texas in football last year, but they're back.
Yes,
because Tom Herman is the Lord and Savior of Texas, and welcome our new overlords, basically.
So, this is I'm going to equate Texas a little bit to I'm going to say that Tom Herman could be a lot like Rich Rodriguez.
Who?
And by that, I mean Rich Rod was great at West Virginia.
Yep.
Undeniably a great coach at West Virginia. because we were playing in a conference that didn't require a whole lot of it required just enough talent to win. We only had a couple teams that we really had to beat every year. And even then, we weren't winning conference championships every year in the depleted Big East. But when it came time to play that one tough opponent each year, or those two tough opponents, or three, whatever it ended up being that year, we were generally able to do it because we had a decent enough team and a decent enough group of talent to do it. Now, clearly what... So basically, Tom Herman goes to Houston, who I'm not saying Houston and West Virginia were the same then, because Houston definitely is in a lower tier. But the point is, Houston plays in a conference where you're going to get talent from Texas as Houston because you're the fifth choice, and that's still better. It's like South Florida and UCF are going to be good at football because you can get the scraps from the rest of the Florida teams, and you're still going to put together a good team.
Right.
So he goes to Houston, and for the couple, you know, first two seasons, I guess, shocks a lot of people. This last year, I'm sorry, he proved that his coaching wasn't great in the games. Or maybe his coaching was not as X's and O's as some people thought it was. Because they got humiliated a couple times, to be quite honest. They humiliated a few teams. They beat Oklahoma. They were able to beat teams that they shouldn't beat. They also lost some games that you just scratch your head at. And now he's going to a big school with a lot of expectations to follow a coach that, you know, we'll talk about that later. But basically, my point is, he's going to a big time school with big time expectations and a lot of talent. Is he going to be able to deliver those same results? Oh. And somehow, everyone is saying that Texas is going to be like this 10-win season. They're going to double their win total in 1 year because of one coach.
Right. My question is...
Well, not one coach.
Is Tom Herman going to cry at his press conference in a couple seasons?
Yeah. Yeah. So that brings me to the next point, is Charlie Strong, who everyone lauded as this great coach. He was a great coach at Louisville. Best guy he could hire for Texas. You know, he was going to turn the program around and get it back to where it needed to be. Well, it didn't happen. Then he goes to South Florida, and everybody's like, well, he's a good coach. Well, then why the hell wasn't he winning games at Texas?
Right.
Okay?
Like, Texas is stuck in this loop.
Is he a good coach, or is he not a good coach? Yeah. So, I'm not saying Texas is going to be 5-7 this year. They very well may win 8 games this year, because they should. They have the talent that they should win 8 games. But we're an 11.7-point favorite, or underdog, to Texas at home in November. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I'm not buying that.
Texas is projected to like win 9-10 games this season by all these people. They're like the third favorite team in this conference, and I don't see it. They've also been saying this for the past 4 years since Charlie Strong got there. I'm not saying that they're not the same coach, but it's the same freaking program, same players, same atmosphere. Same 110,000 quiet people on the stands every Saturday. Same blowhard Texas fans who think they should be winning national championships every turn. When, to be quite honest, Texas football hasn't been as successful as, again, I don't know where they get, they're like, I don't know, they're a little bit, I don't want to say Ohio State fans, I don't want to say Notre Dame fans, but they're a little bit like Tennessee fans. We'll put it that way. They both wear orange. They both say they're UT. Teams that in the past have had very much success playing football. Conference championships, national titles. Haven't been good recently. And they think that one coaching change is going to fix that? I'm not buying it.
I just
maybe
look
Lane
forward.
Kiffin needs to go to Texas.
Oh, years. Man. I just look forward to tweeting Texas back every week. I don't know who they opened the season against, but it would be awesome if they just came out and lost right there. Just so, I don't know. I still like just tweeting Texas back. It angers a lot of fan bases, including ours, because apparently they think that we're, in addition to being Pitt fans,
yeah,
we're
when
Texas
you
fans
see,
as well.
When you see us tweet out Texas back, they open up against Maryland, so I kind of they win that game. To be fair.
Yeah.
But when you see us tweet Texas back, it's because at the – so this is the joke. At the opening game last year, Notre Flame traveled to Austin, Texas for the showdown of former Titans who were looking to be on the rise and prove who was back and ready to compete at national prominence for college football glory. And Texas won in an overtime thriller on a last-second play. It was great. It really was. It was a good football game. And as I forget who was waltzing into the end zone, goes into the end zone. What's his name? The ESPN commentator shouts out, "Texas back!" And then Texas went on to be 5-7, and even better, Notre Dame was 4-8. So do not let any of this talk that we've just had distract you from the fact that 4-8 Notre Dame went 4-8 in the sport of American football last year. So just, you know, just remind everyone of that. But again, don't tell me they're back when they haven't proven they're back. They've been trying to prove they're back for the last 2-3 seasons, and they haven't. I don't know why this season is suddenly going to be better. It's the same thing I've been hearing from Tennessee fans for the past 5 years. Oh, we're going to be great this year. This is our year. The hell it ain't.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up. I got Big Brother to watch.
Yeah, sorry. So then we have Oklahoma to end the season at Oklahoma. Probably the toughest game we're going to have on our schedule just because you have to go to Norman. And then we have a Big 12 championship in Arlington, Texas. That's on September 2nd. That's all the details we know about that. Just real quick, kind of we'll play a game. I like to call it if-then. Give me an if to give me a then of how the season is going to go out. So for my example, if Will Grier has a completion percentage above 65%, WVU will win every game. So basically what I'm saying is Will Grier should have a completion percentage around 65% to put West Virginia at the best record we can have this year. Skylar Howard was around 61% last year. And I know that's 4 percentage points higher, but Will Grier should be able to do it. And if he can be at 65% every game, we should in theory win every game.
Right.
I'm not saying this going to happen. Don't quote me that I'm saying we're going undefeated. I'm just saying that we have the ability to win, in my opinion, every game because we have a quarterback who can win it for us. From what I've seen from him in the past.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. 65% sounds about right. If you can hit that threshold there, you're in the game. I mean, no matter what the other team's throwing at you, you should be able to overcome it if you're completing 65% of your passes.
Yep.
All right, so I'll go if we have a 1,000-yard rusher, whether it be Justin Crawford, Kennedy McCoy. If we have a 1,000-yard rusher, West Virginia finishes top three in the conference. I think that's Crawford hit that mark last year, right? He broke 1,000.
I think he did in the last game that he played. Yeah.
Yeah, he did, and finished in the top three of the conference. I think we're going to see that again this year. If one of those guys can break 1,000 yards, top three. Take it a step further. If he breaks, we'll say 1,300 yards, top two, and we're in the Big 12 championship.
Yep. Okay. And that's kind of the key this year is you don't have to win the conference in the season. You just have to be the second best team to get a chance at it. I think that's kind of the cool thing about a little bit of the cool thing about this new conference championship setup is you don't have to be the best team in the Big 12 to win it. You just have to be in the top two, and then you get a chance to be the best team. So before we leave, not predictions, but in your opinion, what is a comfortable season? What's a bad season? What's a good season? Record-wise, obviously.
Good season, I say 9 wins is a good season. And I'm not counting Big 12 championship. I'm just talking about through to the Oklahoma
9
game.
Wins in the regular season.
So I say that's a good season. Comfortable, 8-4, I guess, would be comfortable. Bad would be 6 wins. If we're 500, that's bad. Because I don't see 6 losses on this schedule. I don't know that I see 4 losses on this schedule. I feel like we're going to go 9-3, just my gut. But I'm not sure how we're going to get to 9-3. I'm not sure what those 3 losses are.
I think 8-4 for me, I'll look at it and go, you know what? That's fine.
Right, yeah.
For a couple, I mean, I'm not going to be mad. I'm not going to be happy, but I'll go, you know what, it's okay. Now, granted, depends on what those 8 wins and 4 losses are, but for me, we got to win our home games. If we win all but one of our home games, you know, maybe that one loss is Oklahoma State or maybe it's Iowa State, who knows. But if we can win all of our home games or just go 5-1 at home, that should be good enough to then get to the 7-8-9 win mark.
Right.
I think we should beat Baylor on the road. We should beat Kansas on the road, you know. If we can steal a game at Virginia Tech, at Kansas State, at Oklahoma, you know, one of those three, I think we can win.
Yeah, I feel the strongest. I feel almost certain that we'll beat Virginia Tech. Kansas State's a toss up because they're Kansas State.
Yeah,
like you never know what to expect there, and Oklahoma is always just a tough test. I'd love for this year to be the year that we beat them and get that monkey off our back, especially after last year. But I feel like Virginia Tech's probably our best, out of those three, our best chance to win one of those games.
Yeah. I mean, I think top three is easy for the taking for us. Not easy, but it's there for the taking. Top two is going to be hard because Oklahoma State is going to be really good this year, and Oklahoma isn't going to drop off that much. But then again, we don't know because Oklahoma's losing two of their star running backs, and they've got a new head coach. Not just new offensive coordinator, new head coach. So, you know, yeah, he was the offensive coordinator. I don't know if that'll affect him, but that's intangible. You don't go from Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley and go, oh, it's all fine.
Right. And if just because we don't finish, I guess we'd have to finish second, but don't count out some kind of weird bullshit 3-4-way tie for the number 2 spot in the championship game. If you really want, like, if you want your brain to melt, go try to read the Big 12's like guidelines for tiebreakers and stuff, because it could get really complicated if there's 3 teams with the same record going for that second seed in the championship. It could get messy.
Yeah, it's
but imagine that. Imagine that Big 12 doing something stupid like.
And that will probably screw West Virginia.
Right.
So
it always will.
You know, but I think we need to be, if we're not top 4 this year, I will be disappointed because I don't think there are more than 3 teams in this conference who could be better than us. If you tell me that Oklahoma State, Oklahoma, and Kansas State finish higher than us right now, I could believe that. You know,
I have a hard time buying Kansas State finishing.
I do too. Now, I don't have a hard time buying Kansas State beating us,
right,
but I do have a hard time buying them
because they're going to
finishing
lose
ahead
games
of us in the standings.
Right.
Yes. Because now, granted, you know, the Wizard of Manhattan is very steady. He is very good at getting those 8-10 win seasons. So he very well could do that again this year. I don't know. I just don't know how much magic he has left up his windbreaker. I don't know. But people are saying Baylor is going to be better than us. Come on, man. Like, I don't – maybe this is because I hate what they're allowed to do now, and that is play football at a competitive level. But, like, stop. Stop. That's all I have to say.
Yep.
I don't know. Texas is still the biggest question mark. People love Texas, and I think they're just waiting for Texas to be good. But I'm not sold that, you know, Tom Herman is the best coach who's ever existed, mainly because I've seen this happen before where you have a hot coach. Look at Kevin Sumlin from Houston. Look where he is now at Texas A&M. They're really getting to 7-5, you know? That's all I'm going to say. That's really all I have left. I mean, we've covered everything I think that you need to know. We will have a Virginia Tech preview next week before the game. Again, that game is Sunday, September 3rd at 9:30. I will be there. Mike will be there, like literally at the game. We'll have a couple other guys from the site who will be there. So, you know, the Smoking Musket will be well represented in Landover, Maryland next Sunday. But the takeaway from all this is that college football is almost back.
It's back this Saturday, actually.
Yes, it is.
USF plays somebody. I don't know who they play. But football's back. Thank God.
So with that said, for Mike Miller, I am Bart Keeler. Thank you for listening to the Smoking Musket Podcast. You can follow us on iTunes, Smoking Musket Podcast. You can follow our website, www.smokingmusket.com, for daily news, notes, opinions about West Virginia sports. We do a good job of keeping you up there on all sports. We're not just football, baseball, basketball. We cover women's soccer, men's soccer, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, we'll give you news about all the sports. You know, just give us a follow, check our site daily, and we'll try to entertain you as much as possible in this upcoming 2017 football season. So, again, thanks for playing along. We will talk to you next week. For Mike, I'm Bart. This has been the Smoking Musket Podcast. And as always,
bye, buddy. Hope you find your dad.